because everything that we do as operations officers is very personal. Your relationships with the people that you're working with, the people that are providing you with intelligence, are very personal relationships. So it comes down to the individual and his relationship with the we call them assets, with the asset.
Well, hello and welcome to the Brain and Brand Show. I'm your host, Timothy Maurice, your behavioral psychology author, and I'm so delighted that you've chosen this episode to download. If you'd go one step further and share this episode with someone you actually care about, particularly someone who's interested in human behavior at the deepest level. We have over 10 years of episodes that you can go back and listen to, but none perhaps more interesting than today. Today, I get a chance to have a conversation with Mr. Jeffrey Sinnott. He is a former CIA senior intelligence officer. Jeffrey, welcome. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
As a voice, as someone who's traveled the entire world, almost undercover probably, how on earth did you get involved with the CIA? Can we just start there?
Sure. It starts with a very unhappy childhood, that I grew up in Ohio and my parents were divorced, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to go into that. Nobody cares. But that drove me to go to Ohio State for 2 years, University, Ohio State University. And then after 2 years, I wasn't getting any, nothing was changing. So I was standing at a bus stop on the campus and I saw a poster for the Peace Corps. And I thought, huh, let's go take a look at that. And sure enough, I walked out with the application, and I think that was probably in November. And then in June, I was on my way to North Africa as a Peace Corps volunteer. I did 2 years in Tunisia, and then I went to, there was nothing waiting for me at home that was any different. So I decided to go to another country with Peace Corps, and I went to Gabon. I spent a year and a half in Gabon, always working on agriculture equipment. And I met a professor who offered me assistance getting enrolled at Sam Houston State University in Huntsville, Texas. Went back, finished up my bachelor's and master's degree. My first job with my master's degree was working in a turkey processing plant. And I'm thinking after about 2 days, this is not the job my mama wanted for me. So I started looking around and, you know, about a year later, I had responded to an ad in the Wall Street Journal for the CIA. And that's all it took. Of course, it's a lengthy process, but it was just the desire. My dad used to say, and I think this is a saying from World War II, once the boy's been to Gay Paris, you cannot keep him down on the farm.
Got it.
Once
Got
I've
it.
Been in international venues and lifestyle and always seeing something new
Sure.
and different, you know, once you get a taste for that, then it's addicting. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We're looking forward to hearing your insights. You are a global thought leader, a speaker who is available to speak at your organization, wherever you are in the world. Before we get into your specific leadership insights in terms of how we can be highly effective, no matter what your rank is, the art of decision making. Before we get into all that, I need to go inside your mind and ask you seven questions that they're kind of either or fun type questions that allow our audience to get to know that you actually are a human. Can we do that?
Let's rock and roll.
All right. Number one, by the way, you can only choose one. Don't be politically correct. You know, these type of people, you know, who try to choose. No. Broccoli or French fries?
French fries.
Clean shaven or beard?
Clean shaven.
When you're on the road and you're traveling for an extended period and you're speaking at a conference and you're there for a week, which would you prefer, hotel or Airbnb?
Airbnb.
Rain or snow?
Rain.
Now, you know, listen, the last three is going to be a little bit tricky, but I don't want you to get caught up. You're going to be fine. Swimming in a pool or an ocean?
Ocean.
Number six, podcast or Netflix?
Podcast.
And finally, by the way, you've really passed the test. Emotion or logic?
You saved the hardest one for last. I'd like to think logic, but I'm sure emotion plays a role anyway because we're humans. How's that for a squishy answer?
You squeezed right through. You did so well. I'm gonna let you get by with it. Jeffrey, thank you so much for allowing us to go inside your mind. Why do you think the CIA has such this of a mystical allure around it? Is it the movies?
It's a combination of the movies and the fact that certainly, now keep in mind, I got out almost a decade and a half ago.
Okay.
We are not permitted by law to speak about what we do while we're inside, and even what we speak about once we've retired and left the organization, it's still not quite controlled, but it tends to be vetted. So I have a pretty good idea what I can and cannot say. And especially in writing, all writing has to be approved, so that we
Are you
don't give
serious?
away.
So any books you publish, anything you decide to publish, it has to be approved before it goes out?
Yes, sir. We sign that agreement when we retire.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yes, sir. Well, there's a very good reason for that. They have to protect their sources and methods. I mean, look. Do you know what the oldest profession is? You tell me. Is it prostitution or is it espionage? Because they've both been around since the beginning of time. Reflect back on one of my favorite Bible stories is Rahab in Joshua 2, where Joshua sends the two spies into Jericho. That was 3,400 years ago. So spies and prostitutes have been around a long, long time. So we have to protect the way we do things. And that's the reason for it. You sign a piece of paper, it says, yep, I agreed to abide by all these rules while I'm inside and after I retire, and that is a lifelong obligation. You're not released from it ever.
Which is closer to reality out of all of these CIA movies? If you watch Mission Impossible, I know they're not CIA, but they're closely linked to this type of spy work, or James Bond, or any of these. Is there a movie that is closely you watch it and you go, "That's not bad."
Yes, Argo with Ben Affleck.
Really?
Yes,
Yeah, I know
sir.
the movie very well. It's one of my favorite movies.
Yes, sir. And I say that for a couple reasons. Number one, it's based on a true story. We really did use the CIA to get those six embassy employees out of Tehran. So
Wow.
that's absolutely true. And as I watch it, and the reason it rings true to me is I see some of the silly questions that he has to answer from congressional aides. And they talk about trying to get him out on a bicycle. And they talk about all kinds of stupid things. And that's an accurate reflection of what you go through when you are trying to promote a new operational plan or operational idea. And it's not as quite as dramatic as getting people out of country, but any operational plan goes through that type of vetting, where you have to answer a bunch of silly questions. And I've sat on in front of congressional aides and had to, oh my goodness, you think, are you serious? They are serious.
Wow.
And so you got
Yeah.
to answer their questions, because if you don't, they control the purse strings.
Let me just say, let's spend a couple more minutes here before we get into leadership conversation, because I'm sure people are as fascinated as I am. Has the political corrected era, the woke era, the era of, everything has to pass the sanity of this new world of ideology, has that influence or impacted, you think, how the CIA operates? Because as you were getting out, things were really starting to change in the world. People, identities, people were open, could brand themselves whatever they want. What do you think is how has the shifting in the political winds in terms of wokeness and ideologies shifted how they probably think about what happens in the CIA.
It was already prevalent when I was there. I retired as a senior officer. I was in leadership positions, and I had people working for me from, let's just say, all walks of life. And the trick is, if you stay focused on the mission, then who you sleep with at home is of zero interest or consequence to me. I don't. We have an operational objective. How are we going to meet that objective? Are you the right person? I mean, this kind of same conversation goes back even further. Well, would women make good CIA officers? Boy, you dare ask that today and you will get bludgeoned. But 20 or 30 years ago, it was being asked. I'm a big fan of having women CIA officers because they can do things men can't, and that's the hard thing to admit. Can you admit that me, your basic middle-class white boy, there's some things I can't do that a woman could do better? And I'll be glad to admit that because, again, my objective is to meet the mission. Not everybody would have that kind of objective. So the same rule applies today. Is your after-work lifestyle going to negatively impact operational success is really the only question. If it is, well, then we need to come up with a different plan. If it isn't, then what do I care? I mean, there are some countries you can go into doing whatever you want. There are other countries that you can't. You can't go into some countries in the Middle East, and be openly gay. Let me just put it that way. I'm not trying to pick on any particular group, but that one we know just from what we see in the news that that is not a really good idea. And women, they used to think women wouldn't make good officers in the Middle East. Well, guess what? They're some of the best because the profile and the threat, because people think no woman's going to be a CIA officer. And so
Got it.
they have it working for them. And that's what you really have to do when you put together an operation. You have to think about what's the best fit. And you got to
Got
have.
it. So I suspect that this may be the one area where you need diversity, where, for example, if you are going into a particular mission in an area that's highly liberal, you need your more liberal offices, or you need someone more conservative. It just depends on the actual mission, right? Like you
That's
actually need a
better.
diverse, you need a diverse team, right?
Yes, sir. You need to have the ability to pick from the best of your cadre and find who's going to be able to meet the mission. Because at the end of the day, that is really the only question. Who's going to be able to meet the mission?
When I think about the work you're doing, I have a cousin who's Secret Service, and we're always chatting about, I'm like, how on earth do you even date? How do you have a life? Because the moment you meet somebody at the bar and you say, I'm Secret Service, first of all, can you even say I'm Secret Service? Like, what was your life like? What age did you go into CIA?
26, I think.
You were 26 years old.
28, maybe 20. Let me do some quick math here. 28.
28. You weren't even 30 years old yet. And at that stage of your life, what type of mindset did you have? And then the second follow-up question to that is, what type of mindset do you need to survive as a CIA agent? And when you after you share that, what type of mindset did you have, and what type of mindset did you need to survive, a type of mindset you need to survive? But the bigger question I have, I want us to explore, is how that translates into your work now.
So my first thing is the CIA does not have agents. We have officers. The FBI
Officers.
has agents.
Sorry. Please don't, please don't hack my phone after this.
No, I point that out to many, many people. Anyway, my mindset when I went in, look, my mother used to tell me how much she wished she'd gone on Project Hope as a young nurse. Unfortunately, by the time she was 24 years old, she had four kids. She wasn't going anywhere. Not back in the 1960s and 70s. So, my mindset, and so one thing that she passed on to me was you got to find the adventure in life. There's a lot of adventure out there. And part of that, my bad family experience drove me to find adventure. And then once you get down on that path, like I said, it's tough to go home and work at the grocery store once you've been driving an SUV around in Gabon on dirt roads and drilling wells and work on farm equipment and then doing all the other things that 20-something men and women like to do. So my mindset when I applied was, let's see what happens, because it couldn't have been much worse than working in a turkey plant, a turkey processing plant. So, of course, some people compare the two as being almost identical. Well, okay, there's a little truth to that. But my mindset was, let's go find out what's going to happen. I was very lucky at the time. My now ex-wife was very supportive, and we were married for a long time, and she was very instrumental in supporting my career and the places that we lived and traveled to. So her only concern when I told her I was applying was she did not want me carrying a firearm. I never carried a
Really?
firearm overseas. In the US I do, but never overseas.
And wait, how were you a successful officer if you weren't walking around with a firearm?
Most officers do not carry a firearm if they are not in a war zone.
Oh, okay. Got it.
So if you're in a war zone, that's different. We're not talking about Afghanistan and Iraq. We're talking about South Africa or South Korea or wherever, where your run-of-the-mill person does not walk around with a firearm. And in fact, those countries have some pretty strict laws about firearms, particularly pistols, to be carried concealed by a foreigner in that country. That a businessman, even a government official, that's going to be a problem. So no, you
Got
don't
it.
get them.
If you're sitting in a room full of executives and leaders, what can they learn from a senior intelligence officer from the CIA?
The short answer would be the importance of taking care of their people. And that's a standard in the military and not so much in the agency, but it was one of my standards. It's that you always made sure to take care of your people. A leader is not there to get promoted. A leader is there to have his people get promoted. That's his job. It's not for him to look good, it's for him to make them look good. Now, if you take that one step further, it's obvious that if he makes his people look good and he takes care of his people, he's going to look good almost by default. When I was in the agency, we were busy working 7 days a week for about a month on a special project. We concluded successfully. And about 2 days later, my boss comes to me and says, "Yeah, we got another project starting. You're going to have to call your people in over the weekend." And I said, "No, we're not going to do that. You just worked us to death. So if someone needs to come in over the weekend, you call me. I'll come in and deal with it and see what else we need." Now, some would call that insubordination. He did not, and he told the senior panel when I was up for promotion to senior intelligence service that story. Because that story reflects taking care of your people. That is the most important role that a leader has.
When it comes to mission planning, when it comes to solving complex mission, let's dive into the mindset of a CIA officer. Because oftentimes, if you look at presidents of big countries, there are almost everything you do is a mission. If you want to get healthcare approved, if you want to get a team to buy into the idea that, we need to export into a different region, it's a mission. It's a very specific mission. And so, to prepare to lead a mission, what type of mind, besides the team dynamics, how did you prepare yourself for complexity? How did you have routines? Did you wake up at a particular time? How did you gear yourself, and what type of mindset is needed for a mission?
The mindset to break it down to its simplest forms. So, and the second thing you do is you take politics out of it. I worked for Democrat presidents, administration. I worked for Republican administrations. I didn't care. That was not my job. My job was to respond to the requirements as they were assigned by the analysts in response to the policymakers. That's the job. So how would I do that? Well, again, you break it down to its simplest form. Who has access to the information that we need? Well, first you have to decide who that is, and then you put together an operational plan to spot, assess, develop, and recruit that person. And then that allows you to assign the officer. And again, you break it down into the easiest ways to do it. And there's not always an easy way, but if you put together a timeline and a strategy, so this is the end result. You start with the end result. And then you go, okay, how do I get there? Well, I do this, 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 and then we'll be there. No plan goes the way you plan it, I can assure you, but you still have to have a plan to get started down the road.
How important is critical thinking and creativity in solving complex mission-oriented problems?
I'm not sure about critical thinking because that term doesn't resonate with me because any thinking is critical thinking. I don't differentiate between them. I know your background, you are much more expert in that field than I am. But creativity is key to coming up with new types of operations. As I said, we've been doing this for 3,400 years. So we have to be able to come up with different ways of doing things. And let's face it, our competition has been doing it for 3,400 years also. They know all the tricks. So we have to come up with different ways to address the problem and to make it work. And then we have to get the right officers involved and go from there.
Have you ever used like these spy pens or like hidden cameras on your shirt? Like, let me just say, look, I want to get into the leadership part of this conversation, but I'm so fascinated by this stuff. Like, have you worn glasses that had cameras in it, or was that before your time?
I want to think. No, I haven't used the pen. I used the pen as a private investigator after I retired. But typically, the problem with using those types of devices is if you get caught with them, that's really incriminating.
I
So
see.
it's bad enough if you get caught with cryptic notes that you might take. That can be a problem. But to have a pen that they're going to take apart and go, oh, let's look and see what's on this. That's very incriminating. So you don't really want to do that. And you don't really gain anything by that either, to be honest with you. Because everything that we do as operations officers is very personal. Your relationships with the people that you're working with, the people that are providing you with intelligence, are very personal relationships. So there's really no benefit to trying to do something like that. If they're not going to tell you what you need to know, then perhaps you have other problems with that operation. So it comes down to the individual and his relationship with we call them assets, with the asset.
Wow. You know, it just hit me as you're talking because sometimes we lean so much on technology to try to solve problems. But as you said, this is an old school science. It's about people. And if you can build a relationship with the asset, gonna go home and tell my partner, I need to work on you and your asset. I'm joking. I think part of my, somewhere between the intrigue of what's been sold to me on TV and the practical side, the practical nature of solving complex mission, there has to be somewhere in the middle of this one or two interesting tips that nobody would think as a civilian, as an officer. You got to give me one or two things that, when you're thinking about negotiating in a relationship, is there a way to gain the confidence quicker? Because if you're in the middle of some foreign country and the mission counts on this asset, this person being confident with you. You got to be able to gain the confidence quickly. You got to be able to gain your team's confidence quickly. You don't have the luxury as a civilian in certain operations. Take us into a little bit of that.
So the biggest thing you have to do, and this shouldn't be a secret or a surprise, it's pay attention to the details. And lots of people don't pay attention to the details. You have to pay attention to body language, because sometimes, again, and you, with your background, I suspect you know this, the body language is going to tell you a lot of where you're
Okay.
going and what you're seeing. And I have had people, both on the positive side and the negative side, exhibit body language that told me, number one, I was straying down a path I did not want to go down, or number two, this guy was so uncomfortable, he absolutely was telling me the truth. With your background, if you see someone squirming, he's talking, he's squirming down in his chair, he's answering all my questions, but he's just squirming and looking down and looking to the side. Is he telling the truth or is he lying? This guy was telling the truth. He was so uncomfortable with what he was telling me because it was so sensitive. So that's why it's so important that you learn to read the body language of people. And that goes again back to paying attention to the details. That would be my biggest
When,
piece of advice.
yeah, so when you're looking at focusing and honing in on the details, how do you get over that insecurity you may have, for example, of am I reading the body language correctly? Does it just take time, or are there certain cues that you can be fairly confident in?
Yeah, these are the regular body language cues that we study during training, and anybody who's dealt in any kind of business knows that these are the body language cues that we look at. Are they looking to the side or down? Things of that nature. Are they talking soft or loud? I mean, you can read those cues, and those are pretty standard no matter what type of business you're in. So it's the same thing. So you learn to see those cues, and you can, again, depending on what the cues tell you, you go forward or you go backwards, and you have to be able to read that in the discussion. Most of the time, again, it depends on the nature of the relationship. If there's someone who's been working with us for a long time, then it's much easier. But if it's someone newly recruited, then you have to pay attention to those details, and because they're going to tell you what's going on. And I had a wonderful experience where I had a young officer come back from overseas, and he had met someone that had been recently recruited. And he was just so excited. He ran into my office literally first thing in the morning because he had done operational testing on this guy, and the guy had failed. So he was a bad asset. And he was not thrilled that the guy was bad. He was thrilled that he had done his job as an officer through the ops testing and determined that he was bad. It wasn't the outcome he cared about, and we don't care about the outcome, but it's going through the process to make sure we get to a outcome.
Identifying someone on your team, if you're a leader and you want to identify someone on your team that is potentially problematic, we know you can assess the body language, you can see patterns of consistency or inconsistency, etc. But are there any early cues early in getting to know someone that can help you detect whether or not this person's a problem?
You're talking about two different groups of individuals. One are my colleagues and coworkers, because that's who's on my team. And in order to get into the agency and to be on my team, you go through so much background vetting that it's hard to describe. In addition to the investigations and the polygraphs and the psychological interviews, you go through all of that to become an operations officer trainee, and then you go through the training to become one. But just the vetting process is very arduous. So there's a very good chance that you're going to be able to work with that person because it tends to make the same people. Now, that's not to say they don't have personalities, they absolutely do. And as a leader, you have to figure, and my boss, when I first started being a leader of officers, my boss at the time was like, "Nope, you got to read each officer and tell them what they need to know to be successful, and you need to learn how to communicate with them." Most of the communications we did was via email, and so it wasn't interpersonal. And I had one lady who worked for me in Asia, because one of the things my boss told me was, you want to try and always greet people. So in something that I sent out in an email, it's like, "Okay, John, how are you? How's the wife? How are the kids? How's school? Everything going good? How's the weather? You know, blah, 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 blah." The personal introduction. Then you get to the work. I had one lady come to me and say, "Please never do that with me, because I know you don't really care about that, and I know I don't have the time to answer that." Okay, then. So my job got easy. But it's that learning how each individual needs to communicate. And whether you're working with a team of 10 or a team with 100, that's what you have to be able to do. And this takes us into the management piece. How many people can you manage successfully? Anybody. How many people can they manage successfully? Is it 5? Is it 10? Everybody, when you get more than 10, you start to get spread kind of thin and being able to manage. So that's also the rules that we follow, where you don't have much more than 5 to 10 people in any chain of command.
Well, Jeffrey, I really appreciate you making time as you head out on your kind of global tour of corporations and conferences around the world. How can people book you to ensure that they lock you in now?
They can go to my website, which is jeffreysano.com, and they'll find out a lot of information about me there. And there's pictures of me diving with tiger sharks in the Bahamas, in addition. Or they can go to my agent, that is TCAA.co, TCAA.co, and then you'll find me on that page as well. And I'm happy to talk to anybody about coming to talk to their groups about leaders and leadership and the importance, as I said, of taking good care of our people. That will always come
Jeffrey.
back.
Yeah,
Sorry.
Jeffrey, thank you so much for making time. And to all of you who are committed to evolving and growing, I hope you found value in this episode. And please again, share it with someone you care about. Until next time.